Cool. Hello!
Hello.
Hello. Hello and welcome to Cabbages and Shame podcast. The first episode. We're saying the last episode was episode zero.
Yeah, technically the first episode.
Technically the first episode. Today we'd like to talk about one of our favourite bands, Idols.
Yes.
Yes. Idols are a Bristol-based band, and last time we labelled them as a precursor band, perhaps unfairly. We'll discuss that more later. They are gearing up for their third album, coming out very soon, this summer. I'm not sure when. Can you remember what the name of it is?
That's bad. Things we should know before recording.
I think it was something like Turbo Town or something. Yeah.
I'm pulling a blank. Anyway, but the important thing is they dropped a new single recently called Mr. Motivator, and that is we're going to pull on that a little bit. They also remixed a Life song called Switching On. We're going to talk about that a little bit, talk about where we think Idols is going, how their sound has changed over the years. And I also would like to talk about Joe Talbot being the lead singer, his consistent insistence that they are, quote, not a punk band.
I appreciate that you censored yourself from what he originally said.
Because they're not a fucking punk band.
Not a fucking punk band. So much for not swearing. Okay. So, Mr. Motivator is the single that came out 10 days ago. On the date of recording, on the 19th of May. A bit rogue that they released it midweek, but they're Idols. They do what they want. And it's a parody, really, of the sort of motivational speakers who come along and, you know, they're like, they're on television, they're dancing, you know, you can do it. You've just got to believe. You've got to get up in the morning. You've got to go for it. The music video that is attached to it is of a similar fashion.
It's really... Go ahead.
Go on. Okay. Where loads of their friends and the band members are dressed up in sort of, you know, campy exercise gear, like something out of an 80s video. And they're all just madly dancing around, jumping up and down. Danny Nedelko of Heavy Lungs is doing the dance from Footloose, complete with rolling around on the floor and taking his top off halfway through. It's complete madness, including very, very corny lines in arguably typical Idols fashion.
I would agree with that. It's definitely their corniest song so far. Idols does have a pretty good way of doing this. I think they're getting, especially with Joy, they've moved more into this, being able to talk about serious subjects and kind of, you know, things that are worth talking about, but doing it in sort of a lighthearted fashion. A lot of people call it positive punk, even though, again, Joe Talbot would say we're not a fucking punk band. And I think this is yet another step on that. It's particularly corny. It's over the top. It's full of, in the song, self-admitted cliches.
Yeah. How do you like them cliches being one of the main hooks? Yeah. And one of the opening, well, it's not the opening lyric itself, but I think like the first, third, fourth, fifth lyric, it was something like Colin McGregor with a samurai sword on rollerblades. It's peak Idols revelry, I think would be the most appropriate word.
It's pure, it's like punk but gone more camp.
I'm just
saying something, because a lot of modern punk is super campy.
Yeah, and a lot of post-punk at the moment is, well, as we talked last time, is very off-kilter and kind of just doing whatever the hell they feel like, regardless of their terrible lyrics or very good lyrics. That's a really damning statement on some current post-punk bands. Interestingly, Idols, there was a video of them on tour before they released Joy as they were touring around America, which is great. I'd highly recommend you look it up on YouTube. I'll try and find the link and link it in the description down the line. And they're in a fancy dress shop because it's St. Patrick's Day that day, and they want to have some green kit to do their gig in. And they're chatting with the person behind the till, and the person behind the till says, "Oh, you know, what kind of band are you?" And Joe, in a very sort of dispassionate way, says, "Oh, we're another post-punk band, just like everyone else."
Did he not say post-hardcore?
No, he didn't. He definitely mentioned punk.
This might be a bit of contention. I was convinced it was post-hardcore, which does kind of lead into...
As we said last time, we'll go and look it up and let you know
who was right on this. But that does lead into this kind of question of, like, we're trying to drop idols into a genre. You know, they're quote, not a fucking punk band. What are they? And I think the best way to do this is going to be kind of going through their musical history, tracking how they're changing. Because I do think they do span genres. And also, like, there's some big differences, especially if you look back at, like, their early EP, like Meat. The difference between Meat, Brutalism, and Joy as an Act of Resistance are huge.
I mean, just the difference between Brutalism and Joy is already quite sizable.
Yeah, but I think Meat even more so. It's when I first, like, I'd listened to Meat as, like, just kind of casually listening before I really gotten into idols. And when I went back and listened to it, it's like, is this really idols? Is that really Joe Talbot? His voice sounds entirely different.
It's actually a really interesting point that idols have been going for a long time. They're starting to achieve fame on the indie circuit. I say indie is just a catch-all term for not mainstream, particularly with the likes of, you know, channels, BBC Radio 6, and other major music publications. But they were going for about 10 years. Joe and I think Bobo, the guitarist, or lead guitarist, I think, they both ran a club, either a club or a club night together, and had the Idols band for a long time. Their other guitarist, Lee, was actually a session guitarist. Oh, there goes the fuzz. A session guitarist and was their touring guitarist before Brutalism, I think, and then joined full-time as a result. I think he's the youngest member of the troupe. But they were going for a long time before, and I think their sound... I remember people... I haven't, unfortunately, heard any of that really early stuff, but I've read a lot of people saying that it's changed quite considerably from their early club days to where it is now, which might... leading in well, might influence where they've come from with Bobo's remix of Switching On by Life.
Yep, which is, for those who haven't heard it, my knowledge of the subgenres within electronic music is relatively limited, especially compared to what we've been talking about. To me, it sounds like trance, but I look forward to someone... It's whatever Gesaffelstein is. Where is Gesaffelstein?
You're asking the wrong person.
it sounds like it belongs on Gesaffelstein's like 2013 album Aleph. And
Life referred to it as an industrial mix.
Industrial tinge techno, apparently. So it's industrial very throbbing gristle. Techno. Yeah, that works. That checks out.
I can't remember who published it first. There was one of the magazines published an article about it shortly after it was released with an interview with, I think, Mez from Life. And he was saying that Bobo, the lead guitarist for Idols, is a great mate of Life's, the band. And he decided to put a bit of an industrial spin on it. That's what they said. Industrial spin with this single, and Life really liked that because they were trying to write quite an experimental love song with it. And well, Switching On is what we've got, and Switching On brackets Idols remix is the spin off.
Yeah, and it's phenomenal. It does sound a lot like Gesaffelstein. For those listeners out there who like Gesaffelstein, or don't like Gesaffelstein but still have listened to Gesaffelstein.
Oddly, my knowledge of industrial music only stretches as far as Throbbing Gristle, who are the progenitors of hard techno and industrial. Porridge, was it Porridge Genesis or Genesis Porridge? Anyway, they died recently.
I am out of my depth here.
They died very recently. They were a beginner of this scene with very avant-garde and experimental music. Very interesting character. Would highly recommend reading about them. The Quietist did a very good article about them. I think it's Porridge Genesis. Anyway.
We'll try and link that in the description.
We'll cover you in links.
So many links.
I think a good place to take this discussion is looking back to their earlier discography and working forwards.
Yeah.
So that we can then discuss their current single, Mr. Yep. Motivator.
So this
hypothesize on where we're going.
Yes. I think that is at least my personal goal for today is figure out what Idols 3 is going to be like.
Toneland. It's called Toneland.
Toneland. Figure out what Toneland is going to be like. I personally, just spoiler alert from my side, I don't think it's going to be wildly different than Joy.
Interesting. I reckon they'll... Let's come back to these hypotheses, because otherwise we're going to become off the rails again.
Yep.
So I think let's focus on their albums for now. Brutalism was their debut album, and... Oh boy!
Wait, hold on. You can't skip the EP.
I don't think I've actually listened to the EP. I have to admit.
Okay,
we'll have to lead the discussion.
So the EP, I think you can hear the evolution of Idols in the EP. Starting off, the top song, the first song of the EP is Queens. If listening to it, the guitar is something off of Joy, but. The kind of angst of the voice, it's somewhere between what we get in Brutalism, but it also kind of has a bit of like a Fontaine's DC feel, where it's a little bit less necessarily angry and kind of has this kind of raw, kind of poetic sound to it. Idol's Chant, Talbot's voice is very different. And if you listen to early interviews of Joe Talbot, his voice, the accent he uses, etc., kind of his like just broadly the way he talks is quite different than what it is in kind of more current things. To say that, you know, he's kind of put on, like, he's, I don't want to say he's put on an accent because I don't necessarily think he has, but he did have a kind of much more understated accent, which is kind of for lack of better terms, kind of just gone more chavvy since
he sort of roughened it up a bit.
Yeah, since 2014, 2015. And you know, it's one of those things. He's had 4 years to, like, his accent has slowly developed in a different direction over the course of 4 years. I know people like Sleaford Mods in particular are they had a whole Twitter spat about this, claiming that Idols are, you know, kind of appropriating working class culture, which Idols totally denies. And this is part of what a lot of people will point to say, hey, look, they're appropriating it. I'm not going to take a stand on this, but I will say that it's entirely possible for someone's accent to change over the course of a few years. Most people pointed out, like, I lived in Scotland for 6 years, and my accent is subtly, albeit, you know, for a lot of people in the US, very different than it was when I left. It happens.
I know a few. There's a few American personalities in the UK, particularly what's his name, is it Rod Hunter? That's a really unfortunate name if it is that. Reggie Hunter, he's a black man from the far south. He's got a really thick Mississippi accent. It really sounds it to the British ear, but when he goes home to America, and I think the south particularly, I think he's from Louisiana, they say he's starting to sound more British.
Yeah.
Sugar. Apologies if you just got that through. Siri just decided to start talking to me. He's got a very he's got a very thick accent, but we still hear it as thick, and the Americans hear it as being softened and more British.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's one of those things as I were to play, as an American, if I were to play Joe Talbot's voice over time from different interviews to my parents, they probably wouldn't catch the difference. But it's, you know, it's they're very distinct British accents that he's kind of slowly moved from one into the other. And, you know, whether that is performative or whether it's a natural change, I'm not going to rule on. I'm not Joe Talbot. I don't know. But the point being, it has changed. And you can hear that a lot if you listen to the Idol's Chant or Romantic Gestures, which is the third track from it. His voice sounds different. It's softer. It's less grating is the wrong word, but it's less guttural. And then when you get into Brutalism, you know, starting off with like heel, that.
I think I feel like I should mention here. I think his style of delivery, particularly in the closing lines, where it's like a very strangled noise caught in his throat. I mean, that, if anyone did that, it would start to sound more guttural.
Yeah. No, but my point is, Brutalism kicks off with this for a reason. This is, I think, what we now know Joe Talbot for.
This is actually where Nathan and I got into Idols, was listening to Mother off Brutalism. I can't remember how I found it, but it turned up on a Spotify playlist or something. And I instantly sent it to about 5 people.
So
go on.
Like, Brutalism and Joy, Talbot's delivery, I think, is actually really similar. If you're listening to the different songs, jumping through a couple, admittedly, this might have been a bad example because it's so bass-driven, but jumping over to Joy is an Act of Resistance and the song I'm Scum, it's very bass-driven. Joe Talbot's voice, the bass is being drawn out more on Joy, and I think that might just be an in-house effect. Having seen Idols a couple times live, you know, jumping back and forth between Brutalism and Joy, his voice doesn't change a whole lot. His delivery is kind of the same throughout. I think this is mostly done in studio. Joy, generally speaking, the bass seems to be turned up a little bit, whereas in Brutalism, bass is just generally a little bit less present. And jump and listen.
Brutalism, the album, does live up to its name, where it's less polished as an album. I think they were trying to go for a more rough sound than they actually went with Joy, where Joy is a lot more polished, it's a lot more rounded, the drums sound cleaner, everything's a bit crisper. And I think Brutalism is a rough edge. It's meant to be showing a sort of a grimy take on Britain. And I think actually that's reflected in the subject topic. With a lot of the songs on Brutalism, they're a lot more personal. They're a lot more steeped in strife and problems that Joe Talbot and the rest of Idols are facing with relation to Joe's admitted previous problems with drink and drugs. And with a lot of the later stuff with his, like,
recent death of his mother as well, Gotho, complicating that.
Death of his mother, yeah. 1049 but... Gotho being a great example, which he usually dedicates to his brother. Which he talked about problems he'd previously had with drink and drugs.
But I will say, I don't know how they recorded Brutalism specifically, but just, you know, just hearing it, it sounds like there was a separate recording, like a dedicated channel on his voice, and I think they just kind of broadly mic'd up the room for the rest of the band. And whereas if you go into to listen to Joy, all the instruments seem to have their own mic, or at least their own recording channel separately, that was then combined in post.
I wonder whether that's on purpose.
I think it is. Again, going for this, it's Brutalism does sound more like a kind of classic punk album, where it's like, okay, yeah, just throw the microphone in the middle, we'll yell, and everyone else play their instruments, and that wall of noise is what's recorded.
I mean, not to mention the Brutalism itself is quite bleak.
Yeah. But and I think it does work really well. But to in terms of thinking going forward, Mr. Motivator is a lot more like Joy in that context.
Yeah, I agree.
The recording is more professional.
And I think the example from Brutalism would be something like Divide and Conquer, where the opening is just I think it's the drums and the bass and Joe Talbot's voice just divide, divide, divide and conquer, and then the band comes in, and it's just a very bleak soundscape.
And you can hear with Divide and Conquer, they've done a lot of like post processing on it. They've added some reverb in places, but the way that it's been assembled, it still sounds like they just mic'd the room and done these things afterwards.
I mean, you say that's a punk thing, but Brian, well, not Brian Eno, sorry. Actually, it may be, but yeah, David Bowie, Brian Eno, and Tony Visconti. Tony Visconti being David Bowie's longtime producer. For the track Heroes, the way that they got that really big sound when Bowie was in the core part of the chorus, screaming Heroes, the way they did it in the Hansa in Berlin, they hooked up three different mics and gated them in three different parts of the room, with the final mic being right up in the top of the ceiling at a very high gate. So when he was just singing normally into the mic in front of him, it was gated normally. But as he started to become louder and more strangled, and the way it sounds with more natural reverb is it would slowly get picked up by mics further and further away to pick up a larger and larger sound. So it wouldn't surprise me if whoever the producer was drawing from those experiences and that idea.
I would agree with that, but also the way it was done, this was definitely, if they did mic the room, it was done in a very small room. The soundscape on Brutalism largely is really quite small. And I think if you listen to I'm Scum, but like Joy broadly speaking, the sound is a lot bigger. And that part of that is that it was like the recording is, it seems to be coming from multiple channels. So you're getting, you know, a little bit more kind of a broader texture on the music than with Brutalism, where it does seem to be. Like it is stereo, but it's like the sound stage is really small. All of the instrumentation aside from the voice seems to be coming from kind of one place when you're listening to it with headphones on. It's a hard thing to describe to a listener without just saying go out and listen to it, but it is one of those things. If you jump back and forth between the albums, you'll hear what I mean. And it sounds lower, like it's a lower fidelity kind of recording technique, and it's been used a lot, especially if you look at like kind of modern, like low end punk. I mean, a classic thing is like the folk punk, for example. You'll have your band gather around. You might give your singer an extra microphone, or you might literally just chuck your phone on the ground and say, "Okay, guys, start playing."
Yeah. And then complain about washing machines or something.
Yeah, and it kind of has that feel to it.
I think it does have a bit more of a DIY feel, which is actually quite interesting because there's a few other bands I've been listening to a lot recently who are very core DIY, and actually you can see that similar reflection between their first album, which they've just recorded themselves, as opposed to their second album, which has been recorded more professionally. Porridge Radio would be the best example in this context, where their first album, I think definitely their first EP, I'm not sure about the first album actually from memory, was recorded literally in one of the bandmates' sheds. They had a little recording kit in the shed, they had some microphones, they had some tape machines, some loopers, and they recorded the whole thing in the shed. Gives it a very wooden soundscape, you know? And their first album is also quite rough around the edges, and less polished than their latest album, Every Bad, which I highly recommend you listen to because it's fantastic. And it actually works quite well to mirror the progression from Brutalism to Joy. I say mirror. Idols did it first. So
they copied progression from brutalism to joy.
I think okay. Actually, I think brutalism and rice pasta and other fillers, they were probably released around the same time, because I think Porridge Radio's first album, Rice Pasta and Other Fillers, was released around 2018, maybe 2017, 2018. It was quite early, and Every Bad, their latest album, came out this year. What's interesting, I've just checked, is that Partisan Records, which is the label that Idols assigned to, released both Brutalism and Joy. So I don't know whether Brutalism had been recorded previously in some rather small Bristol recording studio, and then Joy was upgraded to a larger, more profound recording studio later, with after the success of Brutalism.
I mean, it could be that, or it could be a stylistic decision.
It could well
be. And the reason I say that is, if you give 1049 Gotho a listen, in this case, the introduction, you have this kind of great guitar intro, and that is definitely being recorded separately from the rest of it, and then the drums come in. And then eventually the rest of the band comes in, and that guitarist channel kind of gets faded in with the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while it goes back to like really focusing on that guitar channel. But it is one of those things. Clearly they did have some tools available to them. I think it was a stylistic choice to go for this kind of low tech kind of DIY sound. And I think this is why when people listen to Idols initially, listen to Brutalism, they did get this name as a punk band.
Certainly a hardcore punk band.
Yeah.
Because that style is, I mean, it's lo-fi. It's the whole package, like the subjects of the songs, the cover art, hardcore, yeah. The name of the album, it's all lo-fi. It's all, you know, it's all brutalistic to really lean into the pun. It's all subscribed to the same theme, so it wouldn't surprise me if the whole thing had been done purposely by Idols.
Absolutely, but then moving on to Joy, I see where I don't know when Talbot put out that we're not a fucking punk band quote. I don't know when he said that, but by Joy, I definitely don't think they are.
No, I think they're leaning more into post. I tell you what, this is a point I'm quite keen to make, is the difference in subjects between Brutalism and Joy. They've got very different styles of songs being written. And maybe Brutalism is a, I don't want to say a hangover, but a holdover from what they started with in their club days, where Brutalism is a lot more bleak and quite lo-fi, as we've just discussed, and quite raw compared to the very polished, almost anthemic nature of Joy, with things like I'm Scum, which is, it is an anthem. Danny Nedelko, also an anthem.
Never Fight a Man with a Perm, a little bit less than anthem, but still
Samaritans kind of, and Television.
Yeah,
they've both got huge choruses. You know, with Samaritans, you know, stand up, sit down, don't cry. The mask of masculinity is a mask that's wearing me. Doesn't really work in my accent where I pronounce mask and masculinity differently, but said to. The differences are pretty clear. But then as you sort of progress through the album, they do call back a bit to their previous style. I'd say glam rock is a bit more brutalism styled than the rest
Rottweiler
of their album.
As well, though. That
Rottweiler, yeah. Rottweiler is just a huge breakdown.
Yeah.
It's great when we've been to see them a couple of times, and they usually close with Rottweiler if they can. And once Joe finishes, he basically storms off the stage, and the rest of the band just spend a good 10 minutes breaking down.
Yeah.
And it's glorious.
It's glorious. It's also like, it's my favorite way to listen through Idols. You start with Colossus, you know, start at the top of Joy, go all the way through, and by the time you hit Rottweiler, because it has that big breakdown, you're like ready to jump into Brutalism. And just kind of progress through into heavier stuff. It works really well. So listening to the albums in opposite order.
In descending order of release date.
But that being said, I think with Joy they are drawing a lot more on, like, Colossus, for example. There are areas that remind me of not just like post-punk, but there's some aspects like post-rock in here. The very spaced out nature of the guitars. And these are things that are only possible with, you know, kind of stepping away from that DIY punk sound into something that's a bit more complex. It requires, you know, a bit more implementation of technology, use of more pedals, use of more post-processing. And, you know, I think it's for Idols in particular, it's a good sound. And I think that is something we will hear more of on Idols 3. I don't see them going back to Brutalism. And with Mr. Motivator, you can kind of, again, it's the recording of it is of higher quality. The instruments each have their own channel. It sounds better. It sounds more professional. Better is not the word I meant to use there at all, because I do actually, to be honest, I think I still prefer Brutalism over Joy. Not by much, but it's a close competition there. But I think the recording aesthetic works for Brutalism, but I don't think we will see Idols going back to it.
I think you mentioning the differences and influences for Colossus. Colossus is a really interesting one, because the opening, where it's very slow and contemplative, is, yeah, very post-rock. It's very... I'd say it also gets influences from earlier post-punk, where it's a lot darker, a bit more sort of Joy Division-y in a way, where it's quite slow, it's thought out, it's building with a purpose, which is quite, I think, quite well highlighted by Joe Talbot's live delivery, where he sort of, it's not quite mumbling into the microphone, but he does sort of, it's very, it's very slow,
yeah.
And I think he does it particularly to draw the crowd in, because most of the crowd know the songs.
It's and they're almost all reminiscent.
Slowly singing along.
Sorry, good.
They're sort of singing along, and then it just slows down and stops.
Yeah.
And the mosh is waiting.
Yeah,
totally. And then and the whole place goes bananas.
Yeah, totally. It's almost reminiscent of Hoggle. It's like you start off with a Bauhaus track, and then you kind of reach that point, and instead of going into kind of that more repetitive, spacey sound that Bauhaus is known for, you drop into you have a break, and a mosh breaks out.
Oh my god, it's so much fun!
But it does have a lot of kind of early goth rock influence. Been listening to some Suicide recently, and you could hear little bits of that as well. So you're getting, you know, really early post-punk, early no wave sort of influences in this track. It's a total departure from Brutalism. I don't want to say Brutalism is less complex as an album, because I think there is a lot there, but just in terms of what I've broken down and what I'm hearing, Joy draws more from post-punk than Brutalism does.
I would agree. I tell you what, I think Colossus is almost a love letter to Brutalism in a fashion, because the opening is reminiscent of a lot of the styles that we've already discussed in Brutalism, with the slow and the contemplative, almost lo-fi in how few instruments are playing, how slowly they're playing, they're building up. You can feel the tension building. And then it changes, and we go completely bananas.
That end bit where you like 3 minutes and 50 seconds in, roughly, where you just have I think it's the bass just at the bottom there, before the breakdown, that just repetitive note with, you know, the drums just being a little bit of cymbal work. just repeating that, this is chun chun, it really reminds me of Bauhaus. Like, it really does. It's totally something they would do. But then instead of having, you know, the kind of really drawn out vocals that you'd get with Bauhaus, they have a breakdown, and it goes into, like, as you're both aware, just it literally just turns into a mosh, and it that is where it breaks. It's like you have this traditional post-punk sound, and then they're like, actually, we're going to make this danceable. Go.
And I think that's basically showing their departure from what they did in Brutalism, where it's very thought about and very contemplative and quite raw and lo-fi, not rare, raw and lo-fi. And then they hit the breakdown and they make it danceable, and by God, do people dance. And then that leads into the very high energy, like wrought fashion of Never Fight a Man with a Perm, which starts out with great verve. And it's phenomenal. I tell you what's actually really interesting in terms of their influences. The song Cry to Me is actually a cover. I can't remember of whom. But it's one of the jazz legends from
Solomon Burke. The
40s. Is that who it is?
Yep.
Yeah, Solomon Burke. You're absolutely right. And they completely turn it on its head.
And it fits back in with too much. 1962 R&B/soul.
Yeah, all right, fair. Anyway, they cover that, and Joe continues to give it his, you know, harsh, guttural vocals.
And it works.
It completely changes it, because if you listen to it, the original song, it's an invitation, really, to, you know, to a friend. It's like, you know, I know it's going poorly, but, you know, if you need a hand, just, I'm at the other end of a telephone, just give me a call, I'll help you. But the Idols cover it is, it feels like a challenge. It feels like braying to going, go on then. You're going to cry? Go on, cry to me. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a really clever reimagining of the original song.
I agree. It's a good song.
I think it leads really well into the closer of Rottweiler.
I also agree. So in terms of, like, comparing Mr. Motivator to Joy, there's a lot of similarities musically between it and Never Fight a Man with a Perm. Like, a whole lot of similarities.
Especially with the sort of the bridge bit where it's, I'm Joe Cal fucking Zaggy. I had to look up who Joe Cal Zaggy is. He was a Welsh boxer. He is a Welsh. Well, he's no longer a boxer, but he was apparently quite a famous Welsh boxer. I tell you what's quite interesting. I think it's going to be quite a change from, not quite a change. If we're looking at their scope and their spectrum from where they started to where they are now, Brutalism is rough, lo-fi, raw. We've said it 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
Joy is anthemic. It's like, it's not quite arena rock in a way that Queen used to peddle. But it is, if there were such a thing as arena punk or post-punk, that's what they're making. With Joy.
I think in a lot of ways, and I don't know how you're going to feel about this, they're kind of paralleling, but, you know, 3 years out, Slave's career.
Interesting.
The reason being, Are You Satisfied started off, it's a little bit lower fi sound, it's more punky, and then Take Control, to be fair, I've not listened to Take Control all that much. It's a little bit more anthemic, and then Acts of Fears and Love, we'll see how I don't, Acts of Fear and Love, I have such mixed feelings on. It's a mix of a bit of everything. You know, Magnolia being kind of this, not anthemic, but like catchy, almost Radio poppy. One. It's like, yeah, it's Radio One punk. As I forget who said that. It was one of your friends.
Yeah, James. I said, what about, we were talking about punk and post-punk and the like, and I said, oh yeah, I love Idols. And I went, Brutalism, great album. Joy, could leave it. And I promptly picked a fight. But I said, what do you think about Slaves? And they went, nah, it's really one punk. Don't care about it, mate. Brushed me off in 1 second.
I do think that Idols might be kind of heading down that road. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, it is, you know, as your friend James isn't going to like it, but I don't necessarily, like, it is, it's more accessible punk. It hasn't gotten to, like, you know, pop punk yet. And I do think we might see kind of a resurgence of, like, a new pop punk, kind of like you had in the US in the late 90s, early 2000s with, you know, Blink 182 and Prodigy and all of that. It's a totally different sound than those guys, but it is vaguely punky guitars mixed with kind of a more poppy production, and then the voice is harsh and kind of jumps back and forth between, I don't want to say clean and harsh vocals, because it's not necessarily traditional, like, clean versus harsh vocals. It kind of goes back and forth between pop singing, kind of pop style singing, and then like a bit of a bit of kind of punk shouting on the breakdown.
And space for Talbot, a mosh.
Yeah, Talbot is more committed to having a single type of vocals, and he doesn't ever really sing in a way that you'd hear on Radio 1, which Slaves do. Especially listen to like Photo Opportunity, for example. Like that's such a kind of, it sounds like kind of classic alt rock to me.
Yeah. I reckon.
Go ahead.
I think Toneland, which is Idols 3, most motivated shows that they're kind of, I think a lot of the things where Idols have been not slated for, but have been picked up on in critiques, is the things like got very cheesy lyrics, got very particular things, and they do emphasize that. Yeah. With Mr. Motivator, with the hook being "How'd you like them cliches?" in a very aggressive, challenging fashion from Joe Talbot.
Yeah,
I think they've rather taken those elements that they started to dwell upon in Joy and just turned them up as they move into Toneland. They've kind of taken the bits that have been really successful, which is quite a lot of them, and really given them a lot more verve, a lot more zhuzh. I think one of the things that shows maybe is their genre shift, as it were, from punk and hardcore with Brutalism through to more post-punk with a bit more polish and a bit cleaner, a bit more, not necessarily radio friendliness, because most of their songs are still tagged with an explicit logo, which means they can't be played on the radio without being edited. Amusingly, when Danny Nedelko occasionally gets played on the radio, there's a bit in the middle where they start to spell out something. I forget what it is, but it's basically the end with "fuck you."
Yeah. And, community, fuck you.
Yeah.
As a community,
Danny Nedelko, Community, fuck you. And in the radio edits, I heard it on Radio 6 a while ago. That whole bit, they just blank out the vocals entirely. They don't even bother with the spelling. It's really weird. You just hear the guitars and stuff just going along in the background, supporting the melody.
For probably,
there's nothing else going on.
It's such a long bit as well. I haven't listened to the radio edit. That it seems like you should just edit out that section.
Yeah, just chop it.
Which sucks, because it's a great section, but.
Yeah, indeed. So we go from like punk and hardcore influences with Brutalism. Then we hop through to, as I said, more post-punk, a bit more radio-friendly, a bit more anthemic, almost arena rock or arena punk, I guess, with Joy. And then maybe they're moving continuing their radio-friendly, more polished attitudes into Toneland.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, they still make, you know, big songs. Mr. Motivator, it's a belter. You can definitely play it in the kind of group of people that would appreciate it, they'll all be up going, woo-hoo! Yeah. Let's seize the day! Da, da, da. It's got very big hooks and big choruses, which I would argue is like arena rock. Queen peddled it magnificently in their later albums after they moved away from their prog rock sound. So I think we'll probably be seeing something more like that part three.
I agree. I think we also, what we might long-term see as well is, again, I'm just looking at kind of the history of the band Slaves for this as a similar kind of, you know, quote-unquote punk band that had a rise quickly, changed their sound ever so slightly, had an even bigger rise, and then kind of teetered a little bit, but they're secure enough in their musical careers that now, like, if you look at Acts of Fear and Love, it's a very varied album, and I think it's because they also feel like they've put out enough music now. They're pretty secure. They're going to have people up their shows. They're just doing what they want, and I think that particularly shows with the EP they put out last year, Velvet Ditch, which is not, of all the things they've put out, it's their least popular.
But yeah, it's also probably to the original fans.
Yeah, but it's also they're by far and away their heaviest music. And I don't know this. This is entirely speculation, but it might also be the music that is most, like, you know, personal to them. It's like they're what they wanted to do originally. That could be the case. It might not be the case. It's pure speculation. But I think we might see more of that with Idols going forward, where now that they've kind of established themselves in their careers, they've got a big fan base. They have, you know, they're not going to be worried about selling out shows. They might start experimenting a bit more.
I think that actually one of the things they're going to be doing is they're going to continue to grasp the flag, the metaphorical flag that they hold. They're a bit of a flag bearer, in my mind, for the post-punk scene, especially with things like carrying forwards the ideas of social change, which is one of the things that Sleaford Mods had their goat for. But you have to face it, at the end of the day, Idols has a bigger listener base than Sleaford Mods because, unfortunately, I suppose, they're more approachable. And whilst a lot of the things that Sleaford Mods are talking about in their songs come from a very, not very personal, because that makes it sound like Idols don't have those similar personal problems. I think it's a lot more of a first-hand account on terms of Sleaford Mods of what they saw that's wrong and what they think should be changed, as opposed to Idols slightly, you know, being torchbearers and saying, this is wrong. Let us tell you why we think it's wrong and what we think we can do to change it. And that's also, I think, reflected in Idol's media, not personas, but their media appearances, where Joe is outspoken on talking about women's rights. He's a big supporter of Slow Tie and actually regularly likes to reiterate the fact that Slow Tie is a black man and is, you know, singing these, well, rapping, because he's a grime artist, rapping these songs and making light of these issues. And they're very keen to get involved and make sure that they're talking about the right things and hopefully pushing the right agenda as they're going along.
Yeah. I think this does come down, and we touched on this briefly in episode zero. It's a difference between... It is a bit of a class difference. Sleaford Mods have a very working class background, and they're approaching these issues through kind of a working class lens of these things need to change, and it's very monetarily focused. And then you do have that difference of, you know, Idols are professional middle class broadly. I mean, Bobo's a dentist, for example. Like it isn't to say that, you know, they don't have their challenges. Just as you and I, as members of professional middle class, like, we don't have our challenges. We do. Like, let's be honest here. The odds of us owning a home outright in you know, in the next 20, maybe 30 years. It's pretty low. But at the same time, you know, we're not worried about making rent to the same extent. It is a bit of a difference. It gives you, you can talk about a little bit, a few more broader issues. I would still argue that there's a lot more in common between, you know, working class and middle class people than there are between, you know, working. Like, you're still more likely, you and I are a lot closer to being homeless than we are to being millionaires. That's reality. But it is the there is definitely a movement within professional middle class people, and I think I fall into this sometimes, of kind of co-opting working class ideas and working class like anthems and making it your own. And that it's complicated because it's good in that, you know, people with a bit more power are grasping onto it and trying to bring it to light. But at the same time, at what point in time does that become a middle class thing, you know, who's co-opted this working class voice and the working class no longer have a voice? It's a complicated issue. I don't want to dwell too much on it in this podcast, but it is one of those things that Idols talks about these things. They branch out on these political issues and they kind of do, they don't necessarily ever state that they're coming from a working class perspective, but they do have a working class aesthetic. And that in some ways can be problematic if people start grasping onto this as like, look at Idols, they are the voice of the working class, because they're not. And I think that's where Sleaford Mods had their initial issue with. And it's one of those things, so long as the average, like so long as people looking at Idols and being like, yes, their political ideas, they aren't representative of the working class, that's fine. But once they, you know, people start attributing working class ideas to Idols, that's when you start having issues.
I think Idols would be amongst the first to say that they're not those people. They just want to make light of those problems.
And I agree. And I totally agree. I do think that the media presence surrounding it can become problematic.
I remember there was an article in The Guardian calling Idols the most necessary band, the most necessary band in Britain because of the kind of topics they were tackling and the sound they were peddling, which is a very Guardian article, and I'm thinking, putting it in this perspective. But if it, you know, at the end of the day, if it makes those issues better known amongst those listeners who might not previously have been privy to those issues, that's always a good start.
Yeah.
One of the examples was Noughts and Crosses, the book series. They recently adapted it for television. And the Mallory Blackman, who wrote it, was trying to say, sure, you know, there's probably a lot of people who live in cities, live in London, Leeds, Manchester, Birmingham, wherever, who are probably quite familiar with the issues and the struggles faced. But that's not aimed at them. It's aimed more at, you know, someone who lives in probably a predominantly white part of the country, like Devon, Cornwall, a lot of Scotland, where they might have heard that there are issues. They probably see a lot on the news about problems, you know, not wanting to point too many fingers, but problems in America with race. And they might think, oh, you know, that's in America. That's miles away. But not being able to appreciate the problems because it's not being made to them in their language.
Yeah.
Basically. So it might just be the thing that Idols is their language. It's as close as we'll get to their language. And it makes it clear to them what's wrong, what could be fixed, and ideally, how it can be fixed.
Yeah, and I agree with that entirely. And it is one of those things, they do expand the platform. Sleaford Mods, you know, as much as I love them, they're never going to get played on Radio 1. Idols has a shot at that.
They've been on Jules Holland, and they're definitely on Radio 6, but they're not going to be on Radio 1.
Sorry. And you can expand, you know, Idols does a good job of taking those ideas and getting them out to a larger audience. And that's great. And I don't think Idols thinks that they are like, it's one of those things. It sounds horrible to say, but it's like, you know, Idols isn't really rocking the boat musically in any way. Even in terms of ideas within music, they're not really rocking the boat in any way. They're taking a sound that, you know, has existed in punk for a long time, has existed in post-punk for a long time, that it's existed in grime for a long time, and ideas that have existed across that entire range, and they're condensing it into something that is more approachable. Yeah. And that is an original work, and that is great that they have done it. And, you know, I think Idols broadly do a good job of giving credit to their influences. The unfortunate part, which is what the Sleaford Mods hit on, is that not the average listener, but a lot of listeners think of Idols as being super revolutionary. And to be fair, I was one of those people at one point in time. And then digging through it, you realize actually no, that they're revolutionary in how well they take these things and make it mainstream. But the actual ideas and the sound isn't necessarily revolutionary, and credit needs to be given to their influences. And Idols do a good job of that, but that doesn't always make it down to fans. And that's a hard question. Like, how do you get that down to fans? I don't know.
I mean, whose job is that?
Yeah.
There's something that Joe Talbot has said in previous interviews, that they don't want to be Billy Bragg. They don't want to be saying, you should vote Labour, you should vote this way, you should do this, you should do that. They're trying to make light of these issues and hope to inspire people to go out and try and change them by, you know, voting to make sure they happen, talking to their MPs, talking to whoever's their local person in power. But they don't want to be prescriptive in their politics. They don't want to say that you shouldn't be voting Conservative, you should be voting for, you know, some other party.
Yeah. And to that extent, I think Idols 3 will be less political in some ways. I think it will be talking about broad issues. It will be less kind of political in the traditional and like how punk tends to be political. Talking a lot about class, talking a lot about monetary issues, talking about I'm trying to think of what are some other big ones. I mean, like discrimination and those sorts of things. I think we'll see kind of more talk about wellness, well-being. I'm sure we will hear a lot of allusions to things that happened, you know, during the coronavirus lockdown. But I think it will be kind of yet another step away from traditional punk lyrics towards kind of more broad talking about, you know, wellness and well-being and, you know, kind of things that I think broadly can be more attributed to post-punk than just punk.
I think let's call time there. So yeah, I think there's a, what we've basically gone on about is that they're carrying the torch, they're carrying the flag, they're making light of these political issues, but not necessarily saying that you should fix them in such a fashion, just that you should know about them and make sure that they're fixed. But they've gone from being quite a hardcore, lo-fi, raw-sounded brutalism through to polishing up for joy, being more anthemic, being more radio-friendly, to where we are now with Mr. Motivator kind of taking that step forwards and dragging it further forwards. Where they'll go with it in terms of the rest of the album, whether they'll intersperse more sort of not experimental but more interesting is the wrong word, more different stuff with the likes of Rottweiler and the Breakdowns and other brutalism influences, we're just gonna have to wait and see. But I'm really excited.
I am too. I'm excited to see where it goes. And you know, Idols, they still are the flag bearer. There's no way around that, at least in the British scene, when we eventually get Lisa on to talk about Eastern European post-punk. I'm sure she will tear into us for claiming that Idols is the post-punk flag bearer. But
apart from maybe Fontaines.
Yeah, but Fontaines are still smaller.
Fontaines you see having about
another
larger than mine.
Yeah. I do love Fontaines are great, and they are to some extent they're a flag bearer in a slightly different way. It's a slightly different scene.
I think they're more of a younger appeal than Idols. No offense, Idols. We love you.
Yeah, and that is one thing I could say interestingly about going to the concerts. Idols attracts an interesting crowd. It's a varied crowd. You have people of all ages showing up. You have people in, you know, studded leather jackets with mohawks. You have, you know, quite frankly, quite posh looking guys. The entire range of, you know, everyone you can imagine in an Idols concert. Something that, you know, in a lot of the other concerts we've gone to, especially the Glasgow gigs, you don't quite get that whole range.
They're usually a bit rough around the edges.
A little bit rougher. But yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what their next step is.
Yeah, especially because they've got Kenny Beats, a rap producer, predominantly producing this album. So that will probably also lend something to it. I expect there'll be a heavier emphasis on the drums.
I would also agree with that. I mean, looking at Joy was a lot more, like the bass was definitely tuned up as well. I think we see more of that as well, which quite frankly does keep with the trend in modern pop music of continuously slowly turning up bass a bit more and more and more and emphasizing that, not to the extent of like, you know, 2 feet and that sort of stuff where they went way over the top with it. But it, you know, it does make it more radio friendly. Even I was driving around in the US recently and trying to test out, test driving cars and trying to get a feel for the radio system. And I was jumping between different radio stations and it was driving me crazy because the bass just felt like it was just so just overly boosted. And so I eventually connected my phone and it was fine. There was nothing wrong with the speakers. The radio station itself had been boosting the bass.
Oh, for crying out loud. EQs, eh?
Yep. And on that note, about 5 minutes after we called it, I say we call it here. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to catch you on the next episode. All links that we've mentioned will be in the description, and as always, we'll try and put together a playlist of the bands that we've mentioned. This time will be a lot less varied than the last episode.
Yeah, it'll probably, hopefully, won't be another 4-hour playlist like the last one was.
We've got Brutalism, we've got Meat, Brutalism, Joy, and we'll have to chuck in a little bit of Fontaines and Sleeping Mods.
We won't put the whole albums on. We'll put some crowd pleasers and some deep cuts just to get a real variance, but we highly recommend, if you haven't already, that you listen to the full albums. Anyway, I've been Will.
And I'm Nathan.
And we'll catch you on the flip side. Enjoy.
Bye.
Bye.